it's Chatter on Books, and if you think this introduction is boring, you try writing the copy. I'm Jamie McIntyre. Here's Tori Clark.
Okay, we've been rocking for some time, just in case you didn't notice. Everybody, welcome back to Chatter on Books. Hope you're doing well. Hope everybody's getting COVID every day. I don't know about everybody else, but every day I hear about somebody else who has COVID. It's like, enough already, but hope you're doing well. Thank you for listening. We have a terrific show this evening. I've been looking forward to this for months. I'm holding up for the people on News Channel 8. Like, this absolutely adorable picture.
That's a doggo.
That is a doggo. A golden retriever on the front of this book, The Purest Bond, Understanding the Human-Canine Connection by Jen Golbeck, who's right up the road at the University of Maryland, and Stacy Kalino. And it puts science and facts and figures behind what people like Liz and I have known for 1,000 years, which are dogs are the best thing that can be in one's life. And that is a segue to our lineup this evening, where we have Claude doing the important work, wearing an awesome Top Gun shirt tonight. Awesome. David coming to us from Bender, is it Arena, David?
Arena, Bender Arena.
Bender Arena, where the American University Eagles were about to take on
Siena.
They can beat Siena.
Yes, they can. Hopefully they will.
And I am so happy to say my sister from another mother, Liz Clark. Welcome, Liz. We're so glad you're with us.
I'm delighted and honored. Great to see you all.
Let's just say for those of us on News Channel 8, I think Liz and I could be related.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, I would be so thrilled. That would be great. I don't have any sister. So to have you for my sister would be doubly awesome.
I had so many of them and they're just not. But, you know, that whole 23andMe thing opened up a lot of new possibilities. We should check it out. We are so happy you are with us. Liz, give us an update. And we always want you on the show anytime, anywhere, any topic. But I knew you would love this because you are a dog lover. In particular, you are a lover of Jack the Beagle. And beagles can be a tough love situation.
Especially if your previous was a rescue lab who is just the greatest empath and buddy. And Jack has been a trial, but he's napping, but he can understand what I'm saying.
Of course.
He has been a trial. He's now 11. He is dealing with a cancer, but is just doing remarkably well. So I'm staying pretty much with him all the time. You know, maybe too much. Maybe I'm hovering too much. Right. But his extreme intelligence is now taking the form of just unabashed manipulation and shakedown for everything, because my answer is now always yes. Yes,
of course.
Yes, of course you can. So.
Of course you can. One of the many facts and figures I love about this, and, you know, Liz, really our ulterior motive here is that at the end of the show, and we're going to have Jen Golbeck and Stacy Kalino on. Stacy Kalino wrote the book with Jen. David and Claude are going to be even more inclined to have dogs in their families for many reasons. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. They'll be hypoallergenic. Don't worry, David.
All right.
But there's this interesting thing about dogs and cancer. And the bad news is more dogs these days get cancer than they used to. And one of the reasons is because they're living longer, because we take extraordinary care of them. And since none of my children are here anymore, I can say this. Back in the day, we had two dogs and three children. The people we hired to take care of the dogs when we were gone, background checks, references, just across the board, we'd leave with anybody. And this was, somebody reminded me of this recently, we paid the people who took care of our dogs much more than we paid care of our kids. But we take better care of our dogs and they have better nutrition and better medical care and all these things. They live longer. And at a certain point, a lot of dogs a certain age get cancer. And that's very sad. And you have to make decisions, which are very sad. The good news is they're learning so much from the dogs. There are so many of them. They are learning things from the dogs and cancer that they can apply to helping humans with cancer.
Awesome.
There you go. Jack is providing a service.
I didn't know. You know, I also have to wonder, is the detection of canine cancer so advanced that maybe just the same number or percentage of dogs got cancer, but it just wasn't flagged. It didn't come up. I mean, Jack was diagnosed in June and it's now mid-November. He's yet to present a symptom.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you might not have known.
Yeah. Had I not been told, I wouldn't have had this premature mourning for 5 months, but I also savor every day. So
Jack. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Since we have Liz and David, I have a sporty question for you too.
Okay.
And full disclosure, we'll get to books eventually. It's a sporty question. And full disclosure, I have my wonderful son, Charlie, went to Michigan. So we're all in, go blue, everything else.
Okay.
I have tried 18 different ways to Sunday to figure out what are the rules, what's allowed and what's not allowed in sign stealing. Because I get, you know, plenty of reasons to hate Michigan, plenty of reasons to hate Harbaugh. I like Harbaugh. But actually, I'm going to do Liz first because she's a little disconnected from it, David, and then you. Mm-hmm. What's behind this? What are the rules? What are the regulations? Why is this the biggest thing in college football right now?
I could not be more of a null set, Tori. I mean, I have no idea what the rules are. I really have no idea what they are and what is behind this.
I feel like you're allowed to watch the other team on TV, but you're not allowed to go to a, I don't know, but.
I don't know. I did. Let's have some intelligent insight from David at the moment. I mean, in general, I'm really down on college sports and I mean, I used to say the hypocrisy of the money because the kids are not paid. Now kids are paid.
Yeah.
But, you know, the buyout of, is it the
Jimbo Fisher?
Jimbo Fisher?
Yeah.
Which is not our topic, but illuminate, David, sure. On what is the line of sign stealing?
I only know what I read. So I'm no expert on this, but I believe the Big Ten is leaning on something they call the sportsmanship rule, which is
which we Liz and Tori burst out laughing.
Absolutely absurd.
Sorry.
But yes, in person you're allowed to go to a game as a scout and scout the other team. And as part of your scouting, if you see that they're using certain signs, you can write down that they use this sign for this play.
Right.
What you can't do is what this young man apparently did, which is pay people who aren't university employees to go to Michigan game or to go to Michigan's opponent's games,
right,
and write down the exact same thing that a scout would write down. So you can say that this is ridiculous because it's so much, everybody's doing it anyway. You're just not an employee. Or you can say there is a legitimate rule here. Personally, I think it's stupid, but I think all of college sports is stupid. So, I mean, what I mean by that is I think the rules governing college sports are idiotic and can be manipulated to whatever end you are seeking. You can do
right.
It. So to penalize Michigan for this, when you could penalize them for 100 other things, seems
right.
Kind of silly.
And when you see other people and other coaches and other big-time commentators, I use that term loosely, saying this is ridiculous, you kind of go, okay, again, I'm trying hard not to completely in the tank here, but so I can call my son Charlie later tonight, who went to Michigan, and say, this is what David and Liz say. Is part of what's behind this, Harbaugh hates the NCAA, NCAA mm-hmm. hates Harbaugh. Is it a little bit like Tom Brady hated the NFL and NFL hated Tom Brady?
I mean,
you could say no.
No. What I think it is that the other schools in the Big Ten really want to bang Michigan as much as they can. And they're the ones that did most of the complaining to the commissioner of the Big Ten. And said they broke a rule, you have to punish them. And he said, well, we haven't finished the investigation yet. And they said, but they are benefiting from the cheating right now. You have to do something right now. So
gotcha.
I think it's everything that happens in what I call the big time college athletics, which is why I love going to American University games, because it's not big time. That's exactly why I love going to it. Is just venal and disgusting. I have no sympathy for either Michigan or the people that hate Michigan, because they root for other teams that do the exact same thing. So,
okay. But in the world of Michigan, you would hate Ohio State more.
If I were Michigan, yes. I understand that. I love the rivalry. I think it's great.
Here's the Michigan story. So our son Charlie went there. And who we've never really understood why. But somehow Charlie became friends with a lot of guys on the football team. Who knows why? And it's not like he was legit friends and spent a lot of time with them. And he lived in a group house with some other guys. And we were up there a lot. And we were up there a lot for games. It's really fun to go to the big house. It is really, really fun. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we're up there one Saturday, you know, we can't come up on Friday, and Saturday morning, Charlie says, come by the house. We're going to have brunch, which for them was literally frozen bagels in a, you know, plastic sleeve and a keg. And who knows what was going on the roof, but I didn't go up there. And we show up there and it's 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. And a lot of people are pre-gaming. And I swear to God, I may get in trouble for this. There were members of the team who were there.
Yeah.
And being the mom that I am, I'm looking going, you need to get somewhere. Anyways, it was great. Okay. All right. We are cruising. Okay. We have to do a couple of things. I might have a pop quiz. Don't worry. First of all, we got a review, which I never talked about before. And this is from David. Do you remember and Claude Philip Jett, Stranded in the Sky? That incredible story. Clippers. Liz, this was amazing. The things you don't know, but we didn't know. Pearl Harbor is happening, and we're all focused on what was happening in the naval base. Pan Am had these luxury Clippers flying around the world, a lot to the Pacific. And several of them were literally stranded in the Pacific at the time. And Philip Jett, who's a wonderful partner to a friend of mine, wrote this book, Stranded in the Sky. And here's my favorite thing from this review. The guy's name, or as he put it on his review, Deer Eating Your Tomatoes. And he said, Philip Jett, Stranded in the Sky episode. The story sounded so intriguing that I ordered the book before the podcast was finished.
Wow. That's what
here. Okay. Now I need some advice. So we've been doing the show for quite some time. David Claude knows this. And I collect a book from every author, of course, and they have started to pile up. And they're starting to consume the walls and they're starting to topple over. And, you know, sometimes I'll just hand them to a random stranger going down the street. Sometimes I give them to somebody who might really be interested in Philip Jett's book. But I need to do something with them. And I have a question for all three of you. So, Liz, first, do you hoard books or do you get them out of the house? Do you Marie Kondo them and get them out of the house?
You've caught me at a season in life. I retired in April. Yes. That I'm really thinking, I'm decluttering, you know, I'm thinking of possessions and I'm really trying to streamline, not full blown desk cleaning, but in a way that feels very good. So, and one thing I have to access are books like from college years.
Yes.
You know, I never parted with a book that I bought for school and stuff, you know, when you bought books. Children's books I still have that are dear to me. So I'm not very successful at decluttering that part. But in our neighborhood, I'm sure in yours and all of yours, there are these little wooden.
The little free libraries.
Libraries. Mm-hmm. And I have started like doing my best to put, you know, one book in there every week or every few weeks.
Nice.
And for some reason, that just fills me with a much greater joy than Goodwill. And I love Goodwill. Yeah. I mean, I take a lot of things to Goodwill, but you take a big box to Goodwill. I still am not sure it ends up in someone's hands, but we have an avid little neighborhood book thing and there's lots of people taking and giving. So
that's very nice. Okay. Yeah. David, hoarding books, not hoarding books.
I just did this last week. I said, this room is ridiculous. I got to clean this room up. This is stupid. This looks awful. And it was 90% picking up books. It was picking up books. And the stack is 6 feet tall. I'm not kidding.
Yes. It's a fire hazard, by the way. I think it's a fire hazard in all our homes.
Oh my God. And I'm like a squirrel. I get a book and read a chapter. And then I put it down and read another chapter. And it's just ridiculous. But yes, I have we have hundreds of books all over the place.
Yeah.
In the bedroom, in the attic, downstairs. It's all over the place. It's ridiculous.
Claude, hoarding books, not hoarding books.
No. And I get a ton of them because for a lot of the shows that I work at different radio stations, I get publishers that send me stuff all the time. And so I have tons of books. But here's what I do. I'm not as good as Liz or David. So what I do, when I go to various stations, I'll send an email out to everyone like, hey, guys, I'm coming through tomorrow. I've got about 15 books from publishers. Come by my desk if you want any. But what I do is I leave them there and with no intention of doing anything with them. And eventually someone puts them somewhere. And so I kind of push them off on other people, which isn't a good thing. But I'm assuming people just come and take what they want. But I just leave it there. I just drop them somewhere and push it off on somebody else.
Part of my problem is, and I have them all over the place, and every single, it's, I don't know, 150 now, I don't know. But it's somebody who's been on the show. And with very few exceptions, David Claude, Liz Jett, we've loved the authors. Oh. And I see the book and I'm reminded of something that made us laugh or made us cry or whatever. But I have to. So my daughter Devin has come up with an idea. She goes, you're always talking about independent bookstores and encouraging people to go to independent bookstores. She said, how about this? Which is a ploy she's used since she was a child. She said, how about this? People need to send you, you know, I don't know, via some social media thing. They need to send you a receipt that they bought a book in an independent bookstore. And if they do that, then, and you have pictures of all the books you have, like I build up, you know, whatever, a wall of all these books from Chatter on Books books, and they get to pick one from the Chatter on Books library and you send it to them for free.
Oh, yeah. That's a great idea.
I like that. I
love that idea. Great
idea. It's lovely. It is so, such a really poignant thing. Now, it is, I imagine, quite labor intensive. You know, it's like you're starting a little side business, but
I don't know.
I've got to take that on. I think that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. I've got lovely friends at two UPS stores. They're the best.
Ah. They well, you know, Tori, something else we could do also for our Patreon patrons, patreon.com/chatteronbooks. Okay. We could post a list there and maybe our Patreon people can.
That is a great
idea. If you want to become a Patreon person, just sign up at patreon.com/chatteronbooks.
There you go.
And you get great commentary. Claude, I laughed out loud today when I saw the Patreon. And that was a good one.
It was a really good one.
That was a really good one. Haircuts, Halloween, and something else. It was very fun. Okay, our author's here, but one quick second. So, I never get to my segment B's, but that's okay. But sure. We'll do a pop quiz. And let's see, Liz, you have to go first, then David, then Claude. Because we talk a lot about banned books on this show. What was the first banned book in what we would call North America, not including what is now Canada and Mexico? What was the first banned book? Where was it? You can come up with anything. But where was the first banned book and what do you think it was about?
Oh, my God. You mean there's a real answer to this?
There is. Thank you very much. Chat GPT. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I mean, was it in a school district or I guess
it was a long time ago. I don't think school districts have been regulated when this happened. Where do you think, what part of the, I'll give you a century. I'll give you a century, 17th century.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
Pilgrim's Progress. I don't even know that I can name a book from the 17th century.
Can you name a location, a general location?
You mean the South? Is that where we're going?
Oh, I think New England, right?
It would be in the Northeast.
Thank you, David.
You've got to be.
Thank you. Narrow it down.
Yeah.
Narrow it down. Name a state.
Massachusetts? I don't know.
Yes. Okay. The town is now Quincy, Massachusetts. It used to be something else. I don't know what it was. And the guy's name was Thomas Morton. And I don't know what Thomas Morton's claim to fame was at the time. It was 1637. But Thomas thought it was a bright idea to make fun of the Puritans. And the Puritans said, no, you don't make fun of the Puritans. And they banned his book. And they essentially banned him. But here's the greatest thing. Not too long ago, one of the very few remaining copies holding up for News Channel 8 of Thomas's book called New English Canaan or New Canaan, Containing an Abstract of New England by Thomas, sold on Sotheby's for $65,000.
Wow.
So there you go.
Good for
him. Wow.
Now you know where it all started.
Exactly.
And now, according to the internet, by the way, he was a lawyer, writer, and social reformer known for studying American Indian culture. But that's just what the internet says about him. I don't know.
Gotta be true. That's where I got mine. So it's probably about as true. Should we talk to our fabulous authors?
If they're still here. I would have taken a powder a while ago, but they stuck around for some reason. I don't know.
And David, we know 6:45, you might take a powder. That's okay. Just go. Send us a text how the American Eagles are doing. So Jen Goldbeck and Stacey Kalina, welcome to Chatter and Books. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks.
Hi, thanks for having us.
It's great to see. So, Jen, I'm guessing you're up the road, University of Maryland, about?
So that's where I work, but I actually live by Key West. So that's where I'm
right
now. Nice. Nice. Okay, Stacey, where are you?
I'm in the D.C. area. I'm in Chevy Chase right near downtown Bethesda.
Oh.
We're in downtown Bethesda.
The neighbor.
That was my home.
Are you?
No,
yes, it was.
Used to be. Dave. Yeah, it was. We're in downtown Bethesda.
So I'm in the town of Chevy Chase on Oak Ridge Line, like right off Elm Street.
Okay, sure. I lived on Dorset Avenue.
Ah.
You know, one of the cut-throughs.
Yep. I know it well.
This is Chatter on DMV traffic. Okay. So this is my copy of your wonderful book, The Purest Bond. And you can see by all my stickies, multicolored stickies, I have so many questions, and I have to be respectful of Liz and David and Claude if he wants to jump in. And the ulterior motive here, Jen and Stacey, is at the end of the show, David and Claude will be further inclined to bring dogs into their families, because Liz and I know how spectacular it is, and I can't imagine ever living anywhere anytime without a dog, but that's part of the ulterior motive. So just
can't keep... just drop that and not explain why I don't have dogs.
Well, tell us.
Because I'm allergic to dogs. Every dog makes me sneeze violently, and it's awful. And I don't want to do that to the dog or to me. So
they don't like being sneezed on. And David, my husband's allergic to everything in my life. Dogs, horses, grass, flowers.
No, God bless him. He's a better man than I am. So
they're drugs. They're drugs for that. They're absolutely drugs for that. Okay. So boy, so many questions. But Jen, you're the internet mom of dogs. You're a social media star, thanks to your love and adoption and rescue of so many golden retrievers, which is fabulous. But you study this stuff. And what I love about this book is, and Liz, jump in here anytime, you and I have so many instincts about how great dogs are for our emotional well-being, our physical well-being. You know, I've always thrown out the thing about heart rates are slower and blood pressure is lower when a dog is in the room. But you two put science behind this, which is so fabulous. But how did you two, let's talk about, how did you two meet each other? How did this start?
So I was actually talking to my agent about this book probably in like June of 2020, like heart of lockdown time during COVID, wow, where people were taking in a lot of dogs. And, you know, it was a time both where this seemed like a relevant thing to write about, and also people really needed a happy book because there was like nothing happy going on. And right, so I worked up an outline. I wrote a couple sample chapters. I sent them to my agent and they came back and they're like, okay, this looks good. Have you thought about working with a professional writer to help you with this? Which like hurt my ego a little bit, but I was like, you know, it would be so much easier. Like I, yeah, you know, I'm a professor, so I've written, you know, hundreds of academic articles and yeah, articles and books,
and books,
but nothing. Yeah, but nothing for the general public, though, right? Textbooks and technical things. So really, my agent started looking for writers to pair me with. Stacey and I basically met on like a blind Zoom date for like authors. Our houses in Maryland are like 2 miles apart, which is purely coincidental. And we just clicked on the call, and from there kind of took this book in a, you know, a slightly different direction, but one that I think we're both really happy with.
Oh, absolutely. Stacey, you write about all sorts of health and psychological matters, primarily about people. What was it about this project? Because you've been tapped. You're an award-winning writer in and of your own right. What was it about this project that attracted you?
The dogs. That simple.
The dogs.
So my agent came to me with this potential project, and she said, I don't even know if I should tell you about it because I know you're really busy and you probably don't have the bandwidth for this. And I said, well, just tell me the gist of it. And she said, it's about the bond between humans and dogs. And I said, are you kidding me? This is right in my wheelhouse. And this would be a labor of love. I'm a lifelong dog lover and owner. And I really felt all these issues at that time. And so I threw my hat in the ring. And yeah,
we've talked about this on the show. Pandemic, awful, awful, awful for so many reasons. And it's still going on, by the way. But really interesting things have come of it. And so many people adopted dogs during the pandemic. And I just think that's one of the best things that's come of this. I really do. And I think it makes people appreciate relationships and living in the moment and these kinds of things. So tell us about the process. And Stacey, you go first, because you were the one enlisted to be the writer. What was the process like? How did you first tackle this?
Well, Jen and I worked very closely and came up with a revised outline. And one of the things that we really bonded over in our initial call was end of life issues with a dog, with an aging dog and then losing a dog. And when we met, I had just lost my beloved dog, Inky, a month earlier, and I was a wreck. And so I was telling Jen about this, and I made it literally a month without a dog. And then my family adopted one, a rescue. And so it was looking at all these different issues sort of through the entire lifespan of the relationship between humans and a dog, from the birth of a bond, adopting a dog, buying a dog, rescuing a dog, all the way to end of life. And so we charted it out that way. We went back and forth a lot. And even though Jen kind of downplays her mass audience writing skills. She's a really good writer, and she did a lot of the writing, as did I, and we just went back and forth. It was a very fluid process, and it worked spectacularly.
I drove my husband crazy when I was reading the book, because I just been, you know, he's a dog person. He tolerates our 2-3 dogs, whatever we have at any given time. And it was written into our marriage vows that there will always be at least 2 dogs in our family. But mine's always just been shoot from the hip. This is why they're so good, et cetera. This is why David and Claude should have dogs, et cetera. And I just kept showing them pages. Okay, look, this is the science behind it, which is fantastic. And one of the best, I don't want to get sad too early, but one of the best sections in the book is talking about, they don't last that long.
I know.
These incredible relationships with these incredible creatures, and they're not around that long. And that's a big, big, big part of it. But let's talk about the science behind it. Jen, let's go to you first. Talk about the science behind what makes dogs good for people. What of the various, you know, symptoms, manifestations, whatever, what are the most significant ones to you? Is it heart rate? Is it blood pressure? What is it?
You know, a theme that emerged out of the process of doing the research for this book, where we read pretty much every study that's been written on people's bond with their dogs and tried to synthesize that together, was that there's a lot of ways that we see dogs helping our health, whether it's our physical, our emotional, our spiritual health, our connections with other people. There's all this evidence in all these spaces that dogs make it better. And so the question is why, right? Why are dogs making it better? And the thing that became really clear after a year of reading all this science is that one of the main things going on here is social support. So we know from the psychological literature that if you have a strong social system, a good network of friends, a strong supportive family, all aspects of your life are going to be better. You're going to live longer. You're going to be happier. You're going to feel right. better. You'll be healthier. Dogs essentially fill in another type of social support for us. We form the same kinds of relationships with them that we form with the closest people in our lives. And we can talk more about this later, but like babies bond to their mothers. We have exactly that kind of bond with our dogs down to the biological level. So they're this incredibly important relationship. And that social support that they offer us tends to be at the heart of all these different ways, from helping us with heart disease and blood pressure to our psychological health. It's that we get that support from dogs. They really serve as like a non-judgmental sort of ideal human that we can rely on and talk to and bring everything to and not have to worry about it. And that has just these amazing effects across all parts of our life.
I've always thought in the dictionary under dog, it should just say unconditional.
Just, absolutely. Yeah.
Liz, what is the most important thing about having a dog in your life? Whether it was your beloved lab or Jack.
I'm not very nimble on the computer. Oh, I have just loved every word that the two of you have shared. And you too, Tori. Yeah, unconditional is perfect. I mean, clearly they don't hold a grudge. I mean, if you fail as the human, it's totally just forgotten. There's no grudge holding at all. Or if you leave, there's never a where were you, but just, oh, happy day, you're back. It's been 5 minutes. So just and not that they're mindlessly happy. I mean, my beagle is so smart, it's scary. And his facility with language, I mean, I know his barks, like which yeah. one is alarm, which is it's a friend he knows, this is a good thing, this is a manipulative thing, and he knows my tone, my words. We have hand signals when he wants to go out and I'm ignoring him. He'll do the head step to the door. Like,
and what's your response, Liz, to his hand signals or head signal?
Oh, well, first I laugh. I mean, I just laugh. And then I always give in, especially now that he's ill yeah. and in aging. But I really don't think he knows he's ill. Or if he does, he's so present. It's like, this is a good moment. Let's have this good moment. But, you know, when I was working and almost perpetually stressed and in knots, and it was very, very difficult for me to go to sleep at night when I would finally try to, because my brain would just whir. Uh-huh. I would start just focusing on Jack's breathing patterns, uh-huh. and it would put me to
wow.
sleep. Yeah. It's wow. just so little things he does for me like that. He doesn't even know but I don't stress like that anymore, but he was invaluable. And of course, in the pandemic, which is kind of self-evident, he got me out of the house twice a day. And even though you're not, you know, around as many people in the pandemic as you're used to, we have a very walky, wavy porch neighborhood.
Yeah.
So it was just, I didn't feel my social world was constricting really because of Jack. We went out multiple times a day and saw our friends.
This is so fabulous. I mean, Jen and Stacey, this is right up the book. It's right up the alley of the book. Jen, can you talk about the meaning of dogs being in the moment?
Yeah, so this
is so important for people. I, for reasons not worth explaining, but I'm all into this mindfulness and breathing exercise. It's not worth explaining, but it's so much of the health and well-being of human beings. David and Claude is being in the moment, and dogs teach you that. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. Mindfulness is a thing that dogs just naturally practice. And it's not that they don't remember the past. You know, they know what happened. You know, we rescue all of these special needs dogs that come in with trauma, right? They've had really rough backgrounds. And you can tell when they encounter a situation that brings them back to that place. So it's not that they forget. It's that they're very able to live in the now and appreciate the good things that are happening. And I think anyone who's rescued a dog can see this, where we'll take these dogs from these like terrible abusive backgrounds that are so stressed out. And in a couple of weeks, they're just like, this place is gentle and kind, and I'm happy to be here. And they're able to just experience that. And, you know, that's a thing that like we all could do better with, right? They really serve as models for that. Not to jump ahead too far, but Stacey and I are working on the follow-up to this book, which is about the emotional lives with dogs. And this is one of the things that we spent a lot of time looking at as we put that together, is dogs and their ability for mindfulness and how it just allows them to exhibit all of these other positive traits because they don't get stuck on the past.
Yeah. My dear friend, Jeanette Black, who went over the Rainbow Ridge a few years ago, wonderful woman, raised two sons, Louis Black and his brother. And long story short, her greatest line, which I've stolen, I don't even give her credit much for it anymore, was in her next life, instead of kids, she's going to have dogs because they're easier to train and they're always happy to see you. They're very always true. Happy to see you. To your point, Liz, you can come home from being gone a little bit too long and they're not resentful. They're not, you know, why the F were you at a movie when you should have been here with me? And they're just so happy to have you there. Okay. What did you both learn? Let's do Stacey first and then Jen. Stacey, what did you learn that you didn't know about dogs in the course of writing this book?
Several things. I learned that we influence each other and affect each other down to the biological level. When we look into each other's eyes or we get on the floor and just pet our dogs and we spend time being in that moment together and really connecting, we both experienced this huge surge of oxytocin, which is the love hormone, the bonding hormone, the cuddle hormone. And it's amazing. They have it too. It's totally reciprocal. That was one thing that really struck me. Something else that really interested me is I've always liked the work of Deborah Tannen from Georgetown. And I was fascinated by one of her like quirky little side studies where she looked at the role that dogs play in facilitating communication within families. Sometimes family members can't talk to each other directly, but they'll assume the voice of the dog and say, well, Fido wants to do this, or Fido is upset with you for that. And they're expressing their own feelings. And I thought that was so interesting. And it actually really helped family members get closer and iron out differences.
Interesting. Okay, Jen, what did you learn?
I think my favorite kind of surprising result is a little bit in line with what Liz was saying, where if you're a dog person who takes them out for walks, you know that like that's how you meet everybody in your neighborhood. They know you by the dog. They might not even know your name. I'm terrible with people's names, but I know everyone's dog's name.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so that's going to be familiar. And that was like great to see the science behind that, but wasn't surprising. But the thing that was is that there are these studies of neighborhood cohesiveness and the sense of civic responsibility within neighborhoods that found the more dogs there are in a neighborhood, the higher that sense is. And that's true even among people who don't own dogs, because I think you just get to know the people who are in your neighborhood. You see them out. You feel this sense of kind of light connection to them where you wouldn't if everybody's inside. So the more dogs you have in your neighborhood, the tighter connected that whole community is and the more responsibility they take for one another. And I thought that was just like such a beautiful result that dogs are able to bring us all together. Even if you don't have one, they make life better.
Right. I love that. I cannot say how much I love that. And I'll mute myself.
No, don't never mute yourself. And now I think if we could just make a dog speaker of the house, everything would be fine in Washington. David.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Increasingly, and the older I get, the more I think, okay, I love dogs, horses, and two or three people. And the three people are on the show right now. David, I know you're dying. What do you want to know that you didn't know before, just in part of your educational experience?
I know, look, I love dogs. I'm a dog person. I'm not a cat person.
You are a doggy kind of person. Yeah.
I had dogs when we were kids, but I just would prefer breathing. I'm sorry. Here's what I'm fascinated about was the first of all, there was a word that was used in one of the studies you all talked about, and I forget the doctor's name that did some of the work, conspecific, which I never knew before. That's a great word. If you think about it, it makes sense, conspecific. But what I love was the notion that to study dogs, it was better to study video of dogs rather than just static pictures of dogs. And I thought, for the dogs, not for us. You know what I mean? And so I wondered why that was. How did they determine that dogs react more honestly towards video as opposed to photos of people and dogs?
One of the really interesting results that we found, you know, in finding all of this research is that dogs are really good at reading people's facial expressions and other dogs' facial expressions and tone of voice. Mm-hmm. So they did this study. It was just fascinating, where they would show a dog a picture of a human face and then a human saying something. So there'd be like an angry face and a happy face. And then there'd be like an angry voice and a happy voice. And if they put two together that didn't match, so if they showed me with an angry face, but like a really nice tone of voice, the dog wouldn't respond in the same way as if they matched, which showed that the dog could understand it. And I think that's the phenomenon that plays into the video, that they're able to read like this really subtle nuance in the way that we're interacting, that we're responding. So they can certainly see things in pictures, but just like we understand emotions better if we're able to see a video of what's going on, we know that dogs are really capable of processing that. And there's, you know, Stacey can probably share some of her favorites too. There's just a ton of studies that we came across of the ways that dogs understand and respond to our emotions. And I think video gives them more of that.
That's just stunning. Stacey, what are your favorites?
I found some of the research absolutely fascinating on how dogs can detect medical problems in their people. Yeah. And what they tune into, the fact that they are, I mean, we all know that dogs have an amazing sense of smell and they have like olfactory organs that we don't have and more receptors and so on. But they can pick up on all these different chemicals that are present in our exhalations, our body odor, our sweat, you name it. And some of those changes might point to either a flare up of a medical condition or the onset of one. And I thought that was utterly fascinating.
Yeah, I think it's stunning. I can almost understand the behavioral thing, them picking up on behavioral cues, because we all know our dogs do that. But that same thing fascinating. Okay, from the sublime to the ridiculous. So I spent too much time at a outdoor brewery in Virginia and just lots of different kinds of people hanging out. It's all outdoors, doing this and that, whatever. It's great, wonderful. Kids, dogs, families, whatever. And there's a guy in a really cool, tricked out wheelchair, but it's tricked out. And you can see he's got family members around doing different stuff. And there's a service dog there. And of course, I'm looking and admiring the service dog and his cute jacket and this, that, whatever. And I see him do something. He could use his hands and his arms. And the dog goes over to a cooler, pops the lid of the cooler open, pulls out a bottle of beer, and brings it back to the guy in the wheelchair who could still use it. He could pop the top off the beer, which is interesting. He was buying this at a brewery. But anyhow, I went over, I said, I've got to ask you. He goes, yeah. He goes, I've got three grown children. I've got six grandchildren over the age of 10. None of them will get me a beer. The dog gets me the beer. But he was telling me about, it was an incredible service dog. He was telling me how highly trained the dog was. And the dog wasn't allowed to do anything but his job. And so he had different pieces of Velcro, I would call it Velcro, but different kinds of fabric on the fronts of his wheelchair. And each one represented a different medi need. And to your point, Stacey, the dog would understand when his symptoms are going a certain way. And he would touch that piece of fabric and the dog would go get that particular medicine, not the wrong medicine. Yeah. I couldn't teach my children to do that.
They could do that with any safety or security whatsoever.
Seriously.
None whatsoever. Okay, ladies, what's next? So you're talking about another book already. Jen?
Yeah, we so our working title is Better Natures, Inside the Emotional Lives of Dogs. So this book, The Purest Bond, is about our human connection with dogs. And this next book is going to take a much deeper look into what emotions are dogs capable of? You know, where are we anthropomorphizing a little bit, which is actually small space. Mostly they're capable of a lot of things. How do they embody like the really positive emotions that we all want to have? And what's the science behind how we know that that's true?
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. That is great. Liz, anything else before we subject these wonderfully smart, talented women to 60 seconds more?
Not at all, although...
Advice on dealing with Jack and the future with Jack?
I'm sorry?
Advice for dealing with Jack and the future with Jack?
No, I won't bug them with that. I've lost a beloved dog before, and there's just no shortcut or way to make it anything less than soul wrenching. And so, you know, my battle is don't mourn prematurely. You know, who knows how much time he has. And yeah. I know when he's having a happy day, and it's pretty much every day. He's a beagle, you know, he's not moody. I won't hog them for my needs. No, but, I did on the medical front, you know, I'm an insulin dependent diabetic for many decades. And, I had an endocrinologist maybe 20 years ago. And, he was so ecstatic when I got a lab. He said, "This is outstanding. He will know if you're having a blood sugar problem." And like, he just will know. And Rusty would, in other words, that's a plunge where your body makes a different odor. It emits ketones. It's like it's a smell, right? In that whole realm of smell that they have that we don't. Now, the beagle, Jack, has shown no interest or evidence. But his job is to be a beagle. I mean, he tracks critters outside. It's not...
He's got a different job.
Be the empath, but I could not love him more. But it's just so interesting, not just dogs' intelligence, but specific breeds' traits of this like profound empathy. And I am here to serve you, whether or not you were raised as a service lab. He's a lab. I mean, the whole time I wrote my book, Rusty would just sit quietly right next to me every day, never ask for anything. But the second he heard the little beep that I shut down the computer, he was like, "Yay! You know, we're going for a walk." He never asked for anything. He was just such a great lab. So I've overtalked it.
No, you have not overtalked at all. Okay, Jen first, and then Stacy first, and then Jen. So David, two sons, one of whom's out of the nest, one soon will be out of the nest.
Correct.
Claude's son, who is now 10, right, Claude?
Just turned 11. Just turned 11.
Happy birthday, Manny. The reason, give them the pitch why there should be a dog in their family.
It's the best way to have fun and love and affection and constant support. It's unwavering. And it's just going to bring so much joy to your home.
There's always something to talk about. Okay.
That's true too. Instant conversation starter, always. Instant
conversation starter. Jen?
My dog growing up was my best friend until I went to college. And, we opened the book with this story of a very depressed me in middle school and how my parents got me a dog who I called my suicide prevention dog, which was pretty accurate. He really saved me from a really dark place and gave me this confidant that I could talk to, this place of non-judgment when I didn't have that anywhere else in my life. It was a really profound, safe relationship for me where I didn't feel like I had that anywhere else. And, I think that's probably why I have five or six at a time now, just a lot of safety and happiness around me.
Those are very, very good reasons. Okay, we should let you go because the book, The Purest Bond, is wonderful. The work you've done is incredible to put science and great stories and great illustrations, by the way. I know how hard it is to convince a publisher to put illustrations in a book, but the illustrations and the Purest Bond are fabulous.
Hey, Chatterheads, it's Jamie here with a couple of quick items before you go. First of all, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate your time. There are, however, a few things you can do to help us keep Chatter chugging along. Of course, you can follow us in all the usual places, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Join us on Patreon for bonus outtakes from the show, including Tori's rapid-fire lightning round with the guest and some pre- and post-show persiflage that we usually edit out. Go to chatteronbooks.com to subscribe to our monthly newsletter, where you'll get a sneak peek at the upcoming authors. And don't forget, if you're buying books, please try bookshop.org. It's easy, it's online, and the best thing is you'll be supporting your favorite independent bookstores and affiliates like Chatter on Books. So download us wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a review on Apple if you're feeling so disposed. But, you know, most importantly, just stay in touch. Send questions, comments, ideas, and even insults to info@chatteronbooks.com. That's info@chatteronbooks.com. And thanks again for listening. Stay safe. We'll see you next time.
The book is The Purest Bond. Jen and Stacey, stay with us for a second. It's fabulous. Again, it just reinforces and puts science behind what people like Liz and I have known forever. Soon, David and Claude will know, which is, I'm a big horse person too, but if I had to choose, I'd have to pick a dog over a horse. I'd have to, because they can live with me. It's really fabulous. The Purest Bond is fabulous. I think it's a public service. So thank you for writing it. Really thank you for writing it. I hope everybody goes out to their favorite independent bookstores and buys it. And I hope you come back when you've got the next one. And speaking of next ones, next week, guys, everybody, is our Thanksgiving special. And we have, Liz, if you want to come back, if you're not doing anything next Monday.
Yes, please.
We have David, Claude, me. We have Nevin Martell, Renaissance man of Washington, D.C., who can talk about everything and anything, including food. We have Rodney Ferguson, who is going to have a custom cocktail to go with our author, Karen Tanabe, who we've had on before, who is spectacular. And she has a wonderful book out now called The Sunset Crowd. And it's one of our favorite shows of the year. And we hope everybody can join us. And we hope everybody stays well and doesn't get COVID. And we'll see you soon. David, go Eagles.
Okay, got to go. Eagles, bye.
Oh, bye.